This is Jacinta Parsons on ABC Radio Melbourne and Victoria.
I'm excited to tell our next guest that we are a dedicated tree family here on ABC Afternoons. We have our own weekly tree segment with Dr. Greg Moore, where we basically discuss how much we love trees. The next guest that we're going to be speaking with is in the right place. If you're interested in growing your wonder and love for trees, then her book called The Arbornaut, A Life Discovering the Eighth Continent in the Trees Above Us is the book for you, and its author Meg Lohman joins us this afternoon. Thank you for joining us.
What a pleasure. I'm so happy to be here. Thank you.
We are dedicated to trees on this program, so you are well within your family. The word arbornaut. What is an arbornaut?
Great question. You know, astronauts, of course, explore outer space, and arbornauts explore life in the trees above us, which might only be 100 or 200 feet overhead compared to thousands of miles away in another planet. But it is this incredible place that is so different from life on the ground. So hence, even using the term eighth continent to refer to it being absolutely a life apart from us.
And undiscovered, which I want to get into that in a moment with you, just how surprising it is there can be areas on our Earth that we know very little about. I want to go back with you momentarily, though, before we head high into the treetops. You grew up in upstate New York as a fully fledged nature lover, especially birds. And you'll also be pleased to know we have a bird segment as well on this show. Are you automatically a tree lover if you love birds?
I guess so. At least that's what I thought as a child. I loved climbing trees. I did have the odd few horribly constructed tree forts, but it is true that the minute you get up into those tree branches, there are the birds. So I guess they kind of go together.
Your parents were beautifully supportive of you, but they were not themselves biologists or ornithologists. Where did you find your support when you were little and just so interested in immersing yourself the way you did in nature?
I confess that I probably would be termed a geek into this generation.
Welcome again to the geek family. We belong with you.
Exactly. Nature was not the commonest interest of most of my little friends at young age, but I loved nature partly because I was shy. Probably it was lovely to be with the trees, which never talked back. And I think because it was just so fascinating out in the woods to explore all the time.
I love in the book that you describe, I think you've used the word spiritual, but just moments that transcend our everyday, that first moment that you held a bird in your hands.
Absolutely. And nature is so spiritual. And I think especially now more than ever with all sorts of stress and, you know, the COVID issues, it's just absolutely important for children and families to find some spiritual strength in nature. So I hope everybody gets to hug a tree once in a while.
It's so true. Hugging trees. We've been doing it a bit while we've been in lockdown, my family. And this book is a beautiful way for us to find a pathway if we haven't as yet. But when did it occur to you? You were a young girl. You knew that nature was part of who you were. But it became advocacy as well for you. When did it occur to you that you needed to explore the world above in that upper canopy of the very tall trees?
You know, I loved leaves, another geek element of my persona, I guess. And I really was fascinated by the fact that temperate forests in North America turn all sorts of orange and red and yellow in the autumn before the leaves fall off the tree during winter. And yet, lo and behold, when I first got to a tropical rainforest, which was in Australia as a graduate student, I was amazed that the leaves and the whole canopy stayed green all year round. So it absolutely puzzled me. My curiosity was piqued. And when I decided I wanted to study the leaves to find out what happened to them, how long did they live, what were the things that affected them, guess what? I had to go up the tree for that type of research.
So interesting. You mentioned before you have described it as the eighth continent and the least explored of all the areas possibly in the world that we're yet to discover. Why has it been so thoroughly ignored by science?
It's really surprising to me, and I think this is a good lesson for young people everywhere, that there still is so much to discover. Things that we might take for granted are amazing arenas for exploration. And I think, honestly, that people looked at the trunk of a tree and thought, wow, I'm seeing the whole tree. And they really were only seeing about 5%. So that other 95% above our heads was really not ever explored until people cut the tree down, which wasn't very representative because, of course, all of those birds and insects would either fly away or probably get squished. So we needed to become arbornauts in order to understand the whole tree and the whole forest.
I love your very generous idea but it was you, one of the very first arbornauts, that constructed an apparatus to fly yourself into the tree. I love this. And this is what you describe it as, the way a lot of naturalists and biologists will have to go about their work, is making the tools that become apparent that they need. Tell us about how you found your way into the top of the trees.
Oh my gosh, it is really wild and crazy. And I actually went caving with the Sydney University caving group, and they go down. And I had that little eureka moment thinking, holy cow, I want to go up. Maybe I could use their tools a bit. And the one thing that was a bit tricky is I needed to get my rope up the tree, whereas all those cavers just dropped their rope down into a dark hole. So I welded my first slingshot at the Sydney University physical plant shop.
Was that with Basil? Was it Basil?
Yes, with Basil, that I just found out has passed away. But I did hear some lovely comments from his family, and that was so neat. He was a legend, and all of those people that contribute to making research happen and making the toolkits are really, really important. So with that slingshot and that homemade harness, I borrowed some ropes from the cavers and a few pieces of hardware, and voila, there I was, able to climb up the tree.
But it certainly sounds simple, but it was anything but. That first trip up there, you really put a lot of pressure on your body.
I did. And of course, I didn't know the actions. It's like learning to ride a bike or becoming a dancer. Initially, your muscles get tired and you probably don't have the right posture. But with time, climbing actually isn't something that requires enormous strong muscles. It's a lot of clever use of the equipment. And I did become quite adept at doing that, just like a little monkey.
You used to, further into your study, and I think it was here in Australia in this particular study, you realised that nighttime was a really important time for you to be exploring those treetops, because that's when a lot of the little friends would be coming out to eat. How was it to climb trees at night?
I will say, a little spooky, but also very exciting. And that was a funny story in the book, where I actually discovered that insects feed at night because I had to go to the outhouse at 2 a.m. And lo and behold, by getting up and out of my little tent, I heard all the great big noises of these munching insects up in the treetops. So at night, you need a torch or some sort of headlamp to see where you're going. The only enemies really are biting ants or something that might be a little bit venomous along the way. But for the most part, animals do probably shy away from humans more than we shy away from them. And it was marvelous. It was this amazing opportunity to really find out what was eating all of my beloved leaves. So to me, that was worth every bit of climbing in the dark.
It is an adventure, isn't it? When you say you found that you had to look at this differently after you'd climbed out of the comfort of your tent, it's really the metaphor a bit, isn't it? Because we don't make these discoveries until we're ready to look differently. And, you know, when we're walking around the world the way that we do day in, day out, we forget to look in the way that we need to, with wonder.
It is so true. And I do give a big shout out to Australia, my first rainforest, the continent where I invented the toolkit, and there was a lot of wonder because honestly, there weren't very many people studying rainforests in the 1980s. And so it was this extraordinary new continent, as I called it, the eighth continent. So I'm very, very grateful for all of those amazing, wonderful creatures that live in the tops of your trees down under.
Even the leeches, that was one of the first times you'd encountered such
a
horrific...
Maybe I might do without them if you really want to know the truth.
When you described that first moment of... Because you'd never encountered a leech before you entered an Australian rainforest.
Never in my life, and nobody told me they even existed. How naive was I?
Yes, and then finding that you're being, sucked upon by a leech is quite a frightening.
I gave a lot of blood over the years in the Australian rainforest.
It's really interesting because talking about that wonder, that you understand that as being very key to inspiring that in everyday people, not our arbonauts, but every one of us, so that we feel a compulsion to protect this world.
Yes, I think it is so critical. And I give my children a lot of credit for helping me retain my sense of wonder. That's one real advantage about sharing your career with kids, because they do still have that great curiosity. And if we can only keep that child within us a little bit, then probably we do appreciate nature a lot more, or we appreciate the small things in everyday life.
Yeah, looking differently, not expecting that we know what we're seeing. And my tree friend, Dr. Greg Moore, has just inspired by the pure nature of talking about the nature around us, I suppose, that you start to look at it in a different way. You wonder about it. You have those innate questions asked.
Absolutely. And one thing I tried to say in my book over and over is that every time I asked one question, five more questions popped up, because nature's like that. Everything is linked and complicated, and suddenly you're looking around and asking all sorts of questions.
You were a scientist, you know, with your real interest in looking at the world the way you did, but then you realized how important it was for you not only to be a scientist but to be an advocate and someone who was speaking up on behalf of our environment. What was the shift for you? Was there a moment when you realized that you needed to take that role?
Yes, and I think in the second half of my career, I started realizing that half of the forests that we scientists were studying were either cut down or burned or cleared in some fashion. It seemed a really crazy world to study things, and then some of the species might become extinct or some of the trees would no longer be present. So I really did have to shift my behavior in order to become more action-oriented. It's great to collect data and publish papers, which scientists are trained to do, but I don't think it's a really good track record if we don't make a difference in trying to conserve all these wonderful places for our children's future.
Do you think in the many decades that you've been working in this area that governments, policymakers, the system is starting to change?
I'm optimistic, and my last chapter, of course, is about my new program called Mission Green, where I really hope to help save the 10 most endangered forests in the world. And I think that we have to have hope for the sake of our kids, but I also think that people do look around and say, holy cow, half the species on the planet live in the tops of trees, yet half of the forests have disappeared in our lifetime. And these really bold facts make us, I think, aware that we need to change our behavior and think harder about the future and the legacy of these really critical ecosystems.
We're speaking with the wonderful Meg Lohman, the Arbonaut. The book is called that, and she is the Arbonaut, A Life Discovering the Eighth Continent in the Trees Above Us. I'm really interested too on a slightly different tact, I suppose, to read how difficult it was to be a woman in this field in the 70s and 80s, I suppose. You were told at one point by one of your, very lovely, well-meaning supervisors or teachers that maybe rather than spending time climbing trees, you must be better off preparing for your role as a mother.
Absolutely true. And I wrote the book in part because I wanted girls to hear about my, what I call misadventures, all of my failings and hurdles, because maybe it will help them have an easier pathway. I also wrote the book for boys. I'm the mother of two wonderful boys, so I'm hopeful that both genders can benefit from thinking harder about the fact that we sometimes have some bias against women in certain careers. And it is changing, which is really great. But I also think women need to be smart and they need to support each other, because it's not changing quickly enough. So we need more women at the decision-making table when it comes to conservation and science, for sure.
Meg, do you think there'll ever be an end to this discovery for you?
I hope not. I sure don't think so. There's, if you can imagine, what, 50% of things living in the canopy, and we probably know less than 10%. So I've got my work cut out for me. I think you might have to climb trees with me.
I want to so much. You build this beautiful idea of it. I don't think I'm as brave as you. Leeches really scare me. But you have absolutely inspired me. And I should also mention, accessibility into those treetops has been something that you've been really passionate about as well, ensuring that people of all abilities are able to find their way into that wonder.
Yes, and I am really committed to that, maybe because I was a girl in science and I wasn't included in a lot of places, but I did have a wonderful special program where I trained mobility limited students, kids who were usually limited to wheelchairs, and we devised some ways that they could get into the treetops as well as the kids that could walk. So that was really special. And again, they're usually excluded from things that have to do with field biology, and probably that's not really fair in the end. So the more we can include all kinds and colors and shapes and sizes of human beings, I think, to love trees and explore trees, the better off the world will be.
Do you see that look on their faces of the young biologists when they first find their way into a tree canopy? Does it seem the same as it was for you?
Absolutely. Oh my gosh. Yes. And it's just wonderful. And you don't have to be a youth to love a tree or a canopy. No. You can be a big kid. Maybe you are too.
Yes, we've talked a bit about climbing trees on this show, and it's still well within all of our interests. That is for sure. As I said, Meg Lohman, you have come to a big home of people who absolutely love and adore their trees. And I know that they're going to love this book of yours, which not only tells your story, but also intersperses it with beautiful descriptions of trees that you have loved, I suppose. The Arbornaut, A Life Discovering the Eighth Continent in the Trees Above Us. Meg Lohman, thank you so much for joining us on the show this afternoon.
Well, thank you. And I'm glad to hear about all of you tree lovers. So enjoy the book.
Come and visit us.
I will. I'd love to.
On ABC Radio Melbourne and Victoria, you're with Jacinta Parsons.